Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Let's Talk TV Live. I'm your host, Barbara Barnett. Welcome to tonight's second special Stargate Universe / Stargate show with our special guest, Joe Malozzi, and Happy New Year to everyone. I'm going to get right out to bringing Joe in from the green room as I get my warm up my cup of constant comment. So hang on.
Hello.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I am fantastic.
Happy New Year to you and your family and your extended family of animals.
Thank you so much. And they thank you as well, especially Lulu, the French bulldog.
Yes, yes. You have pugs and you have a bulldog and you have pugs, yeah?
Yep.
I'm really enjoying reading your blog. I've always been sort of an occasional watcher, but I'm loving your stuff about all the interesting foods that you're introducing.
The blog is really a cornucopia of stuff. I mean, since I haven't missed a day blogging in like 6 years, I tend to cover a wide variety of topics. Usually when I'm in production, I tend to focus on the show. So if you kind of backtrack and you're a big Stargate Universe fan, in the years that Universe was in production, you'll find a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that I'm sure you'll find interesting.
I already have. I've been spending
Excellent.
A lot of time in the last year on Gate World, so I looked up all the episodes while I was watching all your notes on your blog. So that was kind of fun to do as well, and I did that actually this afternoon again to kind of have some ideas to where to go with our conversation today. Just a real quick note about a couple of special shows. Tomorrow I'm interviewing Adam Horwitz and Eddie Kitsis, who are the executive producers of Once Upon a Time and also the Tron on the Disney Channel, the Tron animated series. And I'll run that interview, broadcast it next Monday, along with talk about Once Upon a Time. And Jane Espenson, the goddess of sci-fi TV writing, will be joining us again on the 21st of January to talk about her next episode of One Heat Appearance for Jane. So just a couple of those notes. If you all have a question for Joe or for me, or you want to pop on in and say hi, the number is 718-305-6982. And if we have the horror movie experience of last week where the call dropped out, I found out how to get back in really quickly. So I hope I won't do that to you again this week.
I considered last week kind of a run through, that the call drops out. I sort of wasn't following one of the callers. I think basically got all the bugs worked out. I think this session will be smooth sailing.
Oh, goody, goody, goody. What I want to start with is I thought I would be fun, as I kind of warned you last week, that I was going to put you through the Gate World, the viewers poll, the awards for season one and season two of SGU. And
right.
Yeah. So, and I actually went through it because I actually hadn't taken the poll or hadn't voted in the awards because, to be honest, it was really hard for me to pick any one particular scene or episode. So I'm going to put you through that and I'll add mine at the same time and vote.
I will find it far easier, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not sure you will, but, it's my job to put you on the spot, right?
I appreciate it. I'm ready. I had a little bit of mead and I'm fortified.
I saw that you have mead. I have actually drunk mead. Is that the right word?
I
have gotten drunk on mead. I'm not sure which is correct.
I think the latter is correct. Yeah.
I've had it when I've been up to the Ren Fair, up in this area, and just having a general jolly old winter solstice party, stuff like that. People tend to serve mead and grog and all that stuff. Also good for when you're cross-training. I'm sorry, you were going to say something.
No, I was actually going to ask you the difference between mead and grog.
If you haven't figured that out yet. All I know is we used to have grog in our wineskins when we would go off cross-country skiing, but that was a really easy to go. Anyway, I want to jump into this poll here. So what they did was on Gate World, Highgate World people. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, did I play our theme song? I didn't hear the theme song come in. And I better play it because it was actually for the show after last week's show. Zombies Rise from the Sea, who is a Gate World contributor, Taylor Karras, emailed me like the next day and he said, my show with you last week inspired him to write a theme song for my radio show. So
fantastic. Let's hear it.
This is actually only part of it, but here it is. So that's the theme. I thought it was supposed to play automatically at the beginning, and I apologize to you, Taylor, for it not starting off right away. Before we get into that reader's poll, the Stargate Gate World Awards, we've got a caller. Do you mind if we take a call first?
No, let's go.
Hang on. Hi, you're on Let's Talk TV with Barbara Barnett and Joe Malazzi. Who am I speaking with?
It's speaking to zombies again.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. I can't believe I got on first twice. I thought there would be more people calling the second time.
You know, there's a million people in the chat room right now. There's like more than 20 people in the chat room, but not everybody's brave enough to call on in. So I played a little bit of your great theme song, and it's kind of bizarre and discordant and sci-fi-ish. So thank you.
I love it. I love it. When Barbara said that you would created a theme song, I was afraid you were going to rap, and I was pleased with actually what I heard. I prefer that over a potential rap.
Me too.
Thank you. But, when making music, you have to think about the thematic structure. I was thinking about the action, the drama, the comedy when I was making that theme. You know, the piano, the guitar, the horns. Horns represent drama. Horns represent absence. The guitar represents comedy, and the piano represents drama.
Cool.
Nice.
So what do you have on your mind tonight? We have a couple minutes to take your call.
I know. And I have two questions. First off, Joseph, have you heard about the television series Babar?
Babar?
Yeah.
You mean the cartoon elephant?
Yeah, the cartoon elephant.
I have, yes.
Have you watched it?
You know what? Growing up, I wasn't that huge a Babar fan. I was more of a George and Martha fan. So I have not watched the series.
You should really watch it. They have it on. You can buy episodes of it on Amazon. They're rerunning the entire series on Tubo at an early time. I mean, you probably live in Canada, so you don't have Tubo. They do rerun it on Teletoon Retro if you're in Canada.
Cool.
Based on your recommendation, I will pick it up.
I review the series, okay? I do the same thing I do for Babar, I do for Stardate Atlantis and Stardate Universe. I write detailed reviews analyzing the animation, analyzing the characters, analyzing the plot points, and the decisions that they make.
Great.
After our discussion last week, I was kind of confused about which exact reviews you were talking about. So actually I went and looked up your reviews, and I think they're great. You did a great job. I noticed that you're not a big fan of the comic episodes. Or the,
I couldn't take Trinity. I couldn't take Harmony myself, you know?
Okay. Mm.
My second question is this. In the second season of Stardate Universe, you introduced the background radiation that came from the universe, the Missing.
Yes.
Now, in that background radiation, could an entire series be done based on a Missing, bringing these people together with flaws, with incompatibilities, and making them focus on the better good, get to know one another, you know? Just actually unify them, for lack of a better term.
I suppose
sorry,
it could.
Brad and Robert had the idea. I mean, one of the nice things about Universe is that when Brad and Robert, you know, created the show, they knew where they were going. They knew sort of how they wanted it to end. And sort of that message of the background radiation figures into the ending of, you know, this, you know, we envisioned it maybe go, you know, we had hoped it would go five seasons. Unfortunately, it didn't. But, you know, the, you know, the end, you know, of the series, you know, would involve the revelation of sort of what the message, you know, what this grand message was. And, you know, Brad pitched it to me. I thought it was the coolest thing. And, you know, I talked to him after the series ended, and I said, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to reveal it? And he said, you know, just for the time being, maybe just hold on to it. Let's not tip our hand and reveal it. And, you know, I totally, understand, because, you know, this is Brad's baby, and I think it's a terrific idea. And hopefully some way, somehow he gets the opportunity to finish telling the story. You know, if not in another 3 seasons, which seems increasingly unlikely, then some other way.
I know. That's what I inferred from the season finale, series finale. Don't, like, you know, Stardate is just hibernating. We're going to be back, regardless of what happens, regardless of how we get done. We're going to be back. That's what I inferred from the series finale.
That sounds great. That sounds like a great hope.
I know.
Yeah, very hopeful.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Thanks.
So, Joe, I actually wanted to talk to you about that background, the signal, because that really intrigues me. But I want to get to that in just a little bit. But I want to go back to the season one, to the moments that are in the Gate World awards. So they start with the best Nicholas Rush moment of season one. And they actually have three choices, but if you want to pick one on your own, or do you want me to give you the choices?
No, I won't take the choices. I think for me, the standout moment for Nicholas Rush was in Twin Destinies. I think when he gives that speech to the gathered crew, and that speech, I think, is just, you know, huge for him. And Bobby did such a fantastic job there, because in that speech, essentially, encapsulates Rush and, you know, everything he stands for, basically why he's on the mission and ultimately why they are all essentially on the de facto mission. I just thought it was just quintessential Rush, through and through. And I just, that one stands out for me.
Yeah. In fact, I think that might be among my top two or three favorite moments of the entire series. It really, it's a heartbreaking speech. It explains everything there is about Rush and his commitment to this. And it's such a pivotal moment. That episode is, I know we're supposed to be talking about those moments in season one, but that's okay. I can go to Twin Destinies anytime. But it's also such an incredible moment, that episode for Colonel Young. And the expression of his change of heart.
Yeah.
Which probably happened in Greater Good or just after Greater Good, but we didn't see it. And this is just, I think Rush is just as surprised as the audience is, which is just phenomenal. I would have to agree with you. That's like the best moment. Do you have one from season one for Rush?
For season one, I'm trying to think in terms of what episodes fell in which seasons, but I believe season one, it's the one where basically he is at his wife's bedside.
Yeah.
And human. And, you know, and just seeing that part of Rush, I mean, it's you know, it's kind of crazy, but I kind of liken it to Gordon Ramsay. I mean, you know, I'm a fan of the cooking shows, and I watch with my girlfriend, and we watch the crazed Gordon Ramsay on shows like Hell's Kitchen, and you think, you know, this inhuman beast, and then you watch him on a show like The F Word, where he's with his family, and you see almost like a vulnerability there, and it goes such a long way towards humanizing him. I mean, it's kind of a, you know, silly parallel, but I mean, that's the way, you know, I responded to that episode. Robert Cooper did a terrific job, wrote, directed it, and Bobby did a wonderful job. I mean, just demonstrating, kind of that vulnerable side of Rush,
yeah.
and you know, as you know, evidenced through his, you know, his love for his wife, and so, you know, it was just a very touching moment, I thought.
Yes, yes. And in fact, those two moments from season one, season two, were the ones that were voted on by the Gate World people. So you matched with them. And with me, too, because I think that moment, I think Human was just such a beautifully done episode. It establishes a pre-relationship, I guess, with Jackson and with Daniel, and just kind of gives us a really nice handle on Rush again, why he is the way he is to a large extent.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I agree.
So what about the best young moment?
Season one and two?
Yeah, season one and season two.
I think season one, my favorite young moment was at the end of Justice. That final confrontation with Rush where, you know, he says, "Are we done?" And Rush says, "We'll never be done." And then he just lets him have it. And it's just all, you know, basically, how many months worth of aggravation and frustration just, you know, blows up, and he just, you know, loses it. And, you know, and then he just, you know, walks back, you know, onto the ship and tells Ray, you know, he didn't make it. It's right. Just, you know, again, like a side of Everett you haven't seen, and it was just shocking. And it, you know, what made it even more interesting was that originally this episode was not meant to be the mid-season finale. Actually, Space was supposed to be mid-season finale,
right.
But because for some reason we ended up pushing the episodes, it turned out to be, I thought, an even better cliffhanger. Just, you know, Everett just, you know, making the decision, you know, beating the crap out of Rush and just abandoning him on the world, and then on that planet, and then picking things up in the next episode and seeing the effect it has on him, that, you know, he's not the type of guy that would normally do that. And you know, I just thought Louis did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
Which leads me to my season two choice. And I mean, nothing even comes close. I think I just thought that the scene where he euthanizes Sergeant Riley, where basically Sergeant Riley, you know, you realize Sergeant Riley is not going to make it, and Riley says, you know, I please, and he essentially kills Riley. And, you know, we watched the dailies, and the dailies were very hard to watch because Louis, I thought that was Louis's probably, you know, best moment in the series. Just that performance there, it was just so convincing and so heart-wrenching and so difficult to watch. I thought it was just brilliant.
It really was. It was just, wow. It was one of those moments where you just sort of like, he's really doing this. Very believable. I thought actually in season two, and that was an incredible moment. And by the way, 48%, it won the award for the best Everett young moment on Gate World.
Yeah.
I really thought that in Twin Destinies, which wasn't a choice, by the way, they only gave three choices.
Mm-hmm.
His decision to stay just
stays
with me.
Yeah, that was a great moment as well.
That was a great moment. Okay, so we go on to Matthew Scott.
Matthew Scott. For me, for season one, I really love that closing, moments at the end of Time, which is actually, I think, one of my favorite Stargate episodes of all time, where basically, you know, you think they're going to make it, and then you realize, holy crap, they're not going to make it again. And then it's him leaving that last desperate message to their future selves. And I just thought that was a fantastic, fantastic moment. I mean, just, you know, not just for Scott, but just for the kind of the series as a whole, because it doesn't really wrap things up in a neat little bow, and you just have to give it a little thought and realize, okay, that, you know, it's a self-contained episode, and the fact that everything's fine in the next episode means that things worked out. But I just love that episode. I love that scene.
And that episode, of course, was the episode where they discovered the venom from the little critters, which is why they actually had to go back on the planet, even though they knew those critters could kill them. But that really becomes very important as an anesthetic and as an antibiotic and all kinds of things that it does. So I thought that was kind of a cool trigger moment in general. So what about season two?
Season two, again, you know, for me, it was the scene. I don't remember the episode name. Sorry, it doesn't come on. It's just off the top of my head. But it's basically the scene where, you know, Everett's at the end of his rope, and basically he cedes command. And basically mm-hmm. Scott just confronts him in his room and, you know, in his quarters and tells him, no, you don't get to give up. I mean, it was such a terrific, you know, moment, and just like such a terrific scene.
Yes.
You know, kudos to actually my writing partner, Paul Mully, wrote that scene, and it was powerful. And I remember actually the actors loved it because it was just a really nice, meaty, you know, emotional scene that just really got to the you know, the crux of these two characters and the relationship between Scott, who Scott was, you know, who Everett was, and what these, you know, what they meant to one another. I just, you know, I it was really nice to see how the actors responded to it, and just, you know, it showed in their performances. You know, Brian and Louis were terrific.
Oh yeah, I just thought that was trial and error. That was just that was just a great episode, and it kind of, you know, builds on where Scott was coming from all the way back from Incursion, you know, where he mm-hmm. saw Young just pummeling the hell out of Telford/Rush, and you know, where he was really beginning to kind of question things. I also thought that and by the way, that was the one that was voted on by the Stargate contributors as well. I also liked the moment in Malice where he, you know, not confronts Rush, but kind of, you know, sees where Rush is and actually reaches out to Rush and comforts him in Malice, which is one of my favorite episodes of all time too. So great. Those are, and by the way, the moment in time was also the one voted by the Stargate contributors as well. So now we move on to TJ. So you got, you know, you're really pretty much in line with where Stargate. Gate World. I keep saying Stargate.
Gate World people.
Gate World people are. So, okay, so now we move on to TJ. And what's her best moments?
You know, I'm not sure if it's in season one. Maybe I'm thinking season two. When was Divided? Divided
season
was
season one. That was season one.
Season one. Two moments come for me for TJ, and I love Elena. I just basically, she had such wonderful dramatic range. She could play, you know, sort of the tough soldier, but she also has that compassion and you know that just, you know, you could just feel it through, you know, through your TV screen. And just for her, for me, it was two moments. One in Divided, where she's basically being held, you know, captive by the civilian, mm-hmm. Side of the ship. And then, you know, they hear shooting, and they're like, you know, what's going on? And she just gets up, and I forget the line she says, but something like, no, this is war, and that's what we do. And you see kind of that, you know, this, you know, the soldier in her come out. And then the other one was in Faith, where she, you know, she makes a decision that she's going to stay on the planet, mm-hmm. you know, in for, you know, the best interest of her child. And I thought, you know, those are like, you know, two sides of, I guess, the TJ coin. One is that, you know, the soldier side, like the strong, you know, fearless side, and the other side is sort of the, you know, kind of the more vulnerable side. She's, you know, the expectant mother. So, I mean, you know, Elena did the, you know, was, you know, fantastic in both.
She did. Yeah, I also loved her in The Hunt. Which is one of your episodes, I think. Yes. And yours in Fall. And I love that episode for her, where she actually has both of those sides really prominent in the cave, and she really takes a chance with the creature and how she affects Greer, who then kind of backs off. I thought that was a really great moment for her as well. So we've got another call. So I'm going to take that call, and we'll go back to the readers poll. Hang on a second.
Sure.
Hi, who am I speaking with? We've got another call. Hello.
Yes,
are you just listening? Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to Let's Talk TV.
Thank you. Happy New Year, folks, and it's a pleasure to have you, Joel, out back on the show again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I called last week, so this is just a continuation of my curiosity about the show here.
Sure.
Name's Drew. So I kind of wondered, like, you folks tend to stay so accurate to just the general, vastness of space and the emptiness of space and, the kind of emotional toll that it can take on people out in space, you know, besides just the whole sci-fi of, you know, folks running into these aliens and whatnot. So I just want to know, like, what does it take for you guys to write something that's so wholesome and dynamic and, like, pretty accurate to what, like, human beings could face when they, you know, go out in space? Because you're not always going to run into some creature, but, you know, you're going to be traveling for months and months before you get to the next planet. So what does it take for you guys? Do you do a bunch of research, or how do you go about writing?
In your description, I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's, you're comparing almost the two different shows. I mean, the Atlantis and SG-1 were the type of shows where every, you know, would be more of a high adventure series where basically every episode they would step through the gate and encounter a new race or a new, there's new technology. And basically, you know, they were fun episodes, but, you know, the character growth would come about over the course of the series as a result of sort of, you know, the adventures they go on. In Universe, it was a little more self-contained in that, you know, we tried to be sort of, you know, obviously within the parameters of science fiction and, you know, making it as entertaining as possible, you know, try to imagine, you know, as you said, what kind of a toll it would take on people to be, you know, trapped on, you know, and essentially this, you know, giant tin can traveling through space for God knows how long. And so rather than going for the, you know, adventures of the week, we focused on sort of the human drama and, you know, sort of for the first three episodes, it was, you know, them, you know, accustomed, you know, going accustomed to, you know, coming on board, going accustomed to the ship systems, having to find water, the search for food, basically it's no picnic. And, you know, yes, there was a significant amount of research done, you know, by the individual writers. And, you know, I mean, again, I mentioned specifically Brad Wright, who, basically we would read everybody's scripts, obviously, you know, and the writers would, you know, give each other's notes. But, you know, Brad, you know, has always been a stickler for science and logic. And, you know, he would basically vet everything. And, you know, as I mentioned last week, we had John Scalzi, who's a fantastic, I think, the premier writer of science fiction out there today. I don't know if you've read any of his stuff, but I highly recommend Old Man's mm-hmm. War. It was it was a novel that basically, introduced us to him and really that won him the creative consultant position on the show. And he was, you know, terrific. And, you know, we also had a science consultant on the show. And, you know, also mentioned just on an individual basis, Carl Binder, one of the show's writers and executive producers, has a daughter who's a, again, you know, I should have looked into this before I came back on, but I want to say astrophysicist. You know, and she would bet his script as well, or, you know, or if basically there was a situation we weren't sure of, we would always clear it with someone. And, you know, and so we tried to, you know, try to be as true as possible, A, to the science, and B, to the human condition, as, you know, as possible. But again, you know, within the realm of science fiction, you know, realizing that, of course, you know, there, you know, certain things were, you know, may not be as realistic, but I mean, for the sake of drama, we're going to give it a little leeway.
Right. That's
cool.
That's awesome. So, yeah, I really hope that you guys are able to just, if you, whether it's continuing the show via another season or through a film, just to let the audience kind of fill in on whatever happened to that intelligence that, you know, that Rush discovered and what Destiny was built for. I hope you guys can be able to continue that story for us.
As do I, and I'm sure I speak for, you know, all of us who work on the show. Absolutely.
Cool.
Okay, well, great. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks.
Yep, thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, there's a group out there called Save Stargate Universe, and they're a Facebook organization, and they had asked me to make sure that I I make you aware of them and that they are pulling for Stargate Universe to find some way to finish the story. That signal just really, when Rush discovered it in season two, and then as the season went on, of course it became very important to SGC as well, and you know, really,
mm-hmm.
really became a driving force. That and the drones. So, those drones. As the season went on, and you know, it kind of that nexus between science and faith and science and religion has always been something really interesting to explore. And of course there's a wonderful book called God and the Big Bang. And there are books that address physics and religion and physics and faith. And one of my favorite quotations from Albert Einstein is the nature of coincidence, where he says coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. And when you get that signal and you kind of wonder, are they driving at some sort of understanding of intelligent design, or are they going somewhere else? And I know you can't tell me the ending, but can you give me a little insight at all into what you guys were thinking about that signal without giving anything away? I know that's very hard to do.
It is very hard to do. I mean, I would say it is actually one point that I will have to say no. I honestly can't offer too much insight without really, you know, tipping it. You know, again, I'd have to defer to Brad, who is not on this on this call. But hopefully, if he's at a convention near you, you can ask him. I'd be surprised if he actually reveals any more. I think he, as well, is kind of holding out for hopefully, you know, the opportunity to be able to sort of end the story properly.
That would be great. Just, you know, everyone who's listening. And by the way, from last week's show, there were more than 2,000 people who listened to the broadcast in the last week, which is awesome.
Right. Wow. That is awesome.
So everybody who's listening, you know, bombard MGM and Sci-Fi and whoever else you can do it, can talk and ask about it. You know, tell them to bring back Stargate Universe in some form and check out that Save SGU Facebook page as well. So let's go back to our Gate World readers poll. And
sure.
I think we're on the best Ronald Greer moment.
Okay. Okay, for season one, in general, I think it wasn't really a scene, but for me, the episode where, I think the episode was Lost, where basically he flashes back and we see his life as a little boy and his father who, you know, not physically abusive, but, you know, certainly mentally abusive and, you know, sort of, you know, how that, you know, kind of shaped him, you know, and turned him into sort of who he is. I thought that was very insightful. And I thought, Jamil did a terrific job there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, on the flip side, similarly, I guess season two, I go to The Hunt because, you know, it was an episode that I wrote, and you know, I was there on the day, and I just thought Jamil did a terrific job in that moment where he's sitting down, and you know, they're taking a breather after one of the creature attacks, and he's talking to James, and basically he reveals for the first time that he was scared, and he's sort of a guy who, you know, as far as he's concerned, has never, you know, never known fear or, you know, admit as much. And that, you know, and here's a moment where basically we see, you know, a vulnerable side to Greer, where basically he opens up to James and says, look, you know, for the first time, I was actually afraid. And, you know, I don't, you know, I, you know, and I, you know, I thought Jamil nailed it.
Oh, he did. I have to ask you, and I've heard Jamil on some of the commentaries, and he's such a different guy than
he yeah.
He is wild on those commentaries.
He is hugely, hugely entertaining. I mean, basically, some of the stories that he would come up with, I just shake my head.
So I have that kind of begs the question. the actors obviously bring little bits and pieces of themselves. It's almost kind of impossible not to. But how different are, you know, it's obviously Greer is so different than Jamil. And I think Louis, too, is very different than Young is. So do you have any, you know, any stories that kind of express those differences?
Any stories
to share?
Let's see. Well, I was just thinking of one Jamil story where, I mean, it just the craziest thing happened to the guy. And I remember him coming in and telling us one story where basically he was getting out of a cab and it was like, you know, we're in Vancouver and it's always raining. And so basically it rained and he got out of the cab and the keys to his apartment fell out of his pocket and into a storm drain. And basically he couldn't, you know, it was basically he couldn't see the keys. They were, you know, the storm drain was filled with water. He was kind of reaching down. He couldn't reach it. And a homeless man came by and said, hey, you know, for, you know, $5, I'll go down and get your keys for you. And Jamil said, sure. And so basically the homeless man went down and was looking around, you know, and basically he would, you know, couldn't find the keys. And it reached the point he was kept on going up and down and, you know, and I think then another homeless man came by, and I think he was offering him like $5 for 3 minutes, you know, and it reached a point where basically he was actually holding one of these guys by their ankle, and they were upside down in the storm drain, searching for his keys. At which point, basically, a policeman came by and said, you know, you let him go, and he said, no, I still got like whatever, a minute and 30 seconds. And that pretty much, you know, sums up Jamil. It just, you know, the way he told the story, it wasn't meant as an amusing anecdote. It was just sort of a, you know, a matter of fact. He's like, what? Yeah, of course, you know, basically I paid this guy $5. I still have like, you know, a minute and 30 seconds left. And, you know, that is one story that I remember of Jamil. And he was endlessly entertaining. You know, I have to say that cast through and through was terrific to work with. They were supremely talented, but just incredibly, incredibly nice, incredibly professional. And, you know, that's one of the saddest things, the fact that they didn't get to do, you know, a full 5-year run. I thought that was unfortunate.
I've heard that that Robert Carlyle is quite different than his counterpart, Rush.
Yeah, not as much screaming and you know, and collapsing. You know, actually, Bobby is actually surprisingly soft-spoken. Like I said, very professional. He he's always on, you know, on set on time and, you know, it's in his day and very, you know, self-effacing and, you know, just, you know, very pleasant to work with.
Cool. You know what? We have another call. Wow, we have a lot of calls from my area code.
Sure.
Wow, this is wild. I wonder if it's someone I know. Hang on 1 second. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk TV Live. Who are we speaking with?
Hi, this is Jeff Wilson from Chicago.
Hey, I'm from Chicago, too. Cool.
Oh, you're in the
show.
Okay.
Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Joe. This is Jeff from Chicago.
Hey, how goes?
That's going pretty well. I recovered from my flu, so I'm doing all right.
Oh.
One question I always had with SGU is that, you know, the last episode where Eli is essentially the caretaker of the ship now as it's going off into the intergalactic distance.
Yep.
Of course, that's a big cliffhanger coming into season 3, and I know at the point when you all were planning this, you hadn't known that the show was going to be canceled yet. Had you reboarded the breaking episode for season 3? Is there anything you can tell us about that? Any resolution that you can give us a hand on?
You know, I'm just going to access my blog because at when the episode aired, at that point we did know it was the finale, and I did a special blog post where basically I essentially broke down the different scenarios we had discussed. I mean, at that point, I mean, we hadn't really talked about in any great detail what we would have, you know, what would have happened. But we discussed kind of in general terms. And so basically we had different ideas actually I've got it right here, basically on my blog, May 12th, 2011, Stargate Universe Beyond Season 2, what might have been. And actually that was it turned out actually in 6 years, my most popular blog post. I got 20,000 views that day.
Wow. Wow.
And you know, looking it over here, I'm just thinking that, you know, there was the Eli fixes the pod was one scenario. You know, there was the scenario where basically he taps some hitherto unexploited power reserve, which allows him to extend a life support for 3 years, and basically that would be sort of the minimum time that the ship would travel. Another possibility was either if he fails to extend, you know, the life of the pod or extend life support, that he would actually, you know, upload his consciousness to the ship's computer, which mm-hmm. I kind of liked. I thought that was kind of a cool, potentially surprising, twist. And so those are in general terms some of the ideas we had thrown around. And then more specifically, we're talking about starting off season three with the introduction of a military force and sort of, you know, a spacefaring military force, an armada, essentially, however Eli manages to save himself. Basically, they're still on this seemingly endless journey, but they end up being rescued by, or so they think, by this military military race, spacefaring race, and it turns out that they are, you know, their own descendants who, you know, like in epilogue, they encountered, except, you know, they are far more advanced, and they've taken to space, and they have designs on Destiny, and so basically they're going to attempt to, you know, wrest Destiny from us. And so basically that was one of the ideas. And then when it seemed as though maybe we might not get picked up, we were, Brad was pitching an idea that maybe you can do like a one-off movie where you would still introduce this military race that ends up taking Destiny, and Stargate Command launches an op to retake the ship, part of that op would be comprised of members of SG-1, members of Atlantis, and so it would be a real, you know, a true sort of three series, you know, crossover. I thought it was just such a terrific idea and a great way to end the series, but, you know, unfortunately we didn't even get the opportunity to do that. So it remains sort of interesting reading on the blog, I guess.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for calling, by the way.
All right. Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks.
One of the things that was kind of interesting that I kind of thought about was in Gauntlet, you know, in Seizure, had Stargate, had Telford and Young not pissed off the Langarans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would have maybe had some access to Destiny. And we talked about this a little bit last week, where we were talking about consequences, you know, and little threads that are dropped and they come back later to haunt everyone. And that kind of occurred to me as one of really major one where, you know, wow, they lost their chance of.
Yeah, in fact, actually, you know, that you mention it, and, you know, we were on the topic of you know, beyond season two and or the movie, but, you know, one of the possibility was that in that time that they were asleep, they could have brokered a deal with the Langarians, at which point, you know, Telford could have, you know, led a military excursion onto Destiny and repopulated with sort of more military personnel, and, you know, in which case, I don't know, you know, it would have been really a one-way journey, but, you know, you could have injected new blood into the series. That was another possibility.
Right. And then also in the realm of those kinds of consequence episodes, of course, in Twin Destinies, going ahead and make dialing in the star like that, and with everyone going through the Stargate, of course, Telford goes through to Earth, but what happened to everyone else? Well, they weren't dead,
right,
which we find out in Common Descent, but that again was like a real consequence of that.
Yeah.
Of that dialing. And that was actually one of the things, again, we talked about it last week, that just really pulls me in the pulls you into the series, is that narrative that sort of keeps going and brings you back into earlier episodes. You can't really watch them as standalone episodes to a large
extent,
but why would you want to? So I want to go back and finish the Gateworld readers poll.
Sure. Sure.
With the best Eli Wallace moment. How can we not do Eli? So let's do Eli.
For me, for season one, would be the end of season one, where basically, you know, Chloe is exhausted and he's on the run. They're both on the run from the Lucian Alliance. And, you know, there's a point where basically he has to pick her up, physically carry her. And I, you know, I just thought that was, you know, so heroic. And, you know, it just, you know, he's basically up to this point, just kind of the geek, the, you know, heroic in a, you know, very different way, in a very non-physical way. And yet here he is, you know, literally sweeping the love of his life off her feet and, you know, basically struggling, you know, as badly as he can to, you know, to save her. And I just thought that was, you know, epic Eli. I love that.
Yeah, that's the real hero there.
Yeah, and then the flip side for season two, I think, again, the finale, where basically he elects to stay behind. He makes the decision, I'm going to stay behind, and then, you know, we do the you know, the bookend sequence where all the lights go out, and then we find him in the observation deck, and with, you know, just kind of a bit of a smile on his face, because that's exactly where he wants to be. And,
right.
You know, again, it just kind of distills that, you know, if, you know, who Eli is, and that split second, that smile, I thought was, you know, wonderful.
He really had such a nice growth during the two seasons, just from being,
mm-hmm.
you know, this sort of hacker dropout guy to
yeah.
really stepping up. And it was really nice to see that growth over 2 years. I
mm-hmm.
also, you know, back in season one, I also loved in time that wacky conversation about, you know, sort of desert island movies.
Oh, yeah.
Rush, which was ticking Rush off completely. But I thought it was really, really fun. I agree. Empire Strikes Back would definitely be on my list.
Yeah.
So let's move on to Chloe, who also grew tremendously through the seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, she's obviously more than – I know that, you know, the early comments were, you know, she's the damsel in distress, but I thought she demonstrated, you know, a lot more than that, obviously. And, you know, one of the scenes that comes to mind is it Judgment? Is it Judgment where basically she's defending Young, who's been on trial for murder. And I thought that was, you know, great. I mean, just, you know, for the kick-ass side of Chloe. And I thought Elise nailed it. So that, you know, season one, and then season two, you know, I love this again, you know, off the top of my head, I don't remember which the name of the episode, but essentially, you know, she records her goodbyes. And, you know, Greer comes in and, you know, they have that kind of conversation where basically she knows that Greer is going to be the one to end her life when the time comes, and she's okay with it. And he appreciates the fact that she's okay with it. And it's just like, I just thought a perfect moment between these two characters.
Right. In Visitation, I think that was.
Visitation, right.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I also loved when she reacted to her father's death way back in, I think it was Air Part 2.
Yeah.
That was great. Somebody asked the question,
yeah.
by the way, not about that, to change subjects slightly.
Sure.
Somebody from Russia who has this, has a group called Atlantis TVRU in Russia, asked,
okay.
Joe, where are Brad Wright and Robert Cooper now? Maybe in stasis pods on Destiny, because we have not heard anything.
No, you know, in fact, they are not in stasis. They are actually being quite busy. You know, I see more of Rob because he was in my fantasy football league. So we got together every Sunday, and he's working on multiple projects. And I suspect that, you know, we'll hear something from him very soon in 2013, you know, with regards to sort of a show. Brad, you know, I've exchanged emails with, and basically he's been working on a couple of other projects as well. And, you know, I can't say too much, but I think Brad is a terrific writer. And the last thing I read of his is, I think, terrific. And, you know, another, something in the realm of sci-fi as well. And I'm hopeful that also hear something from him in 2013. I mean, you know, after like, well, for me, it was 12 years working on Stargate. And frankly, I was exhausted. I made the mistake of not taking a year off in 2011. And but I mean, I did not make that mistake in 2012. I decided that's it. You know, I continued to write, but I didn't do any producing and essentially set myself up for 2013. And I think Rob and Brad did the same thing. I mean, you know, in their case, they worked, I think it was like 15 years straight on a franchise. And I'm sure they must have been, I mean, they deserved some time off, and I think they've taken it. And, you know, even though they've, you know, haven't done any producing, they've been very, you know, still very busy on the writing side. And, you know, as I said, I expect we'll hear something from them this year for sure.
Cool. So let's go back into this, and we're going to talk about Camille Ray moments.
Ming. That is actually one of the things I miss most about working on the show was Ming Na's laugh. She was a hoot, I should say, to work with. So for her, I'm trying to think. Probably, you know, the as much as I wasn't a huge fan of the Stones, the episode where she ended up switching bodies with Perry, Dr. Perry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, goes back to Sharon, you know, she's in the wheelchair. And, you know, I remember when we first, we were casting Ray and, you know, we were looking at the tapes and you know, but there's several auditions and, you know, at that point, we were all very good. But I mean, you know, it's just who has kind of a better sense of the character. And then Ming Na came on like, holy crap, that's Ming Na, and she was fantastic. And then that was really a no-brainer. And you know, again, someone who's, you know, very pleasant to work with. In the show, she was very serious. You know, the character of Camille was very serious, almost, you know, dour at times. And again, you have sort of the flip side. Ming is wonderful to work with and just hilarious, just really very, you know, joyful, very happy. You know, just one of those people who you like to be around, you enjoy being around.
Cool. Yeah. You know, that the episode where she switches with Perry, Sabotage. You know, in retrospect, and when I had read about it, that had been so controversial. I think because of people anticipating what was going to happen, and between Perry in Ray's body and Rush. And I was like, I watched it, and I was like, well, what was all the fuss about? Because I thought it was done really well, and I don't know if there were changes made or if people were just kind of, you know, how people get when they get hold of promos. Those promo monkeys can sometimes mess with your head.
Yeah.
But I know that was pretty controversial before it aired anyway.
Well, we were certainly well aware of the controversy beforehand. And also, I mean, ultimately, when, you know, we were happy with the script and you know, what the episode we had shot. And I know there were a lot of people who were very nervous, but, and I guess it's natural to expect the worst case, you know, the worst case scenario. But, you know, as I said, you know, Brad and Robert are who created the series and, you know, and, you know, Brad who led it through the two seasons, you know, they're terrific writers you know, I thought that episode was fantastic, and I think it was Brad who wrote that episode. And
it was great.
And, yeah,
I liked that a lot.
Good to be right. Yeah.
So the next one is best David Telford moment. I was almost gonna not do that one because I have to be honest. Telford was probably among all the characters my least favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
He's a bad guy, or because?
Yeah, you know, I think because he was such a bad guy, I just never quite believed in the second season that he was so redeemed. And I don't think he earned Young's trust at all. And I just didn't like him. I disliked him. Not Lou Diamond Phillips, who did a great job.
Right.
But I just go ahead.
I think also you gotta keep in mind that they had a friendship. I mean, basically we saw you know, we got on board, you know, at a point where basically their friendship had fractured and you know, they were at odds. But there was a history there, you know, prior to that. And so, I think I can certainly see where you're coming from. I think sort of from our point of view, we thought, you know, as someone who had that friendship, that strong friendship, to sort of be able to sort of remember, you know, that person, you know, beyond the last whatever, you know, the last year, you know, that's what kind of allowed Young to basically, say, let bygones be bygones, to reaffirm that friendship. So, yeah. I mean, for Telford, the redemption moment for me was Incursion Part 2, where you know, he basically works with them as kind of a mole within the Lucian Alliance to sort of turn the tables on Kiva. And then, in a kind of in similar fashion in I think it was Awakening, that was my episode, where he realizes that he's not going to be able to get back to the ship in time, but he sort of, you know, reversed the situation and sort of, you know, buys him enough time. And, you know, he just, you know, he basically realizes he's doomed, and he just basically tells Young, you know, take care of those people. And that's the last we hear of him. And you know, those two. LDP, also fantastic to work with. Huge foodie, by the way.
A foodie. Okay.
Yeah.
Man after
your
own heart.
You see him all over Food Network.
Oh, cool. Yeah, my husband also hears him narrate a lot of – my husband's a big History Channel buff, so he's always
hears
History Channel. So now we come – and I'm going to skip over a bunch of them because we're almost out of time. I can't believe it.
Wow, time flies.
I know. Best episode. There's a hard one.
That is tough. I guess for season one, I call them the Blueberry Aliens, but the aliens in space – I thought they were terrific. I thought Mark Savella, our visual effects supervisor, and his entire team did a terrific job with those, with those aliens. And I think they were a formidable adversary. Just like in season two, I would pick the drones because they were really, at the end of the day, they were unbeatable. I mean, they reached a point that there was no way they were going to beat them. And so at that point, they realized run. And that's exactly what they did and how we ended the season.
That's got to be like the best adversary ever in anything. How could you fight them? Can't fight them. So, okay, now we get to the best episode.
For me, season one, I've got to say, I love Time. Robert Cooper wrote, directed, I thought, the greatest time travel episode we'd ever done on Stargate. That was it, and I thought it was brilliant. And for season two, Carl Binder, I always thought was, one of the best writers on the show. And just because he was able to do humor, he was able to do action, but he was so good at the character stuff. So, season two epilogue, which, in many ways could have been season ender. If we had known, in retrospect, that's something we could have done, is just made that episode the season ender. But that I thought was brilliant, and that was, Carl Binder at his very best, and that stands out for me as sort of my favorite episode of season two.
Cool. I think for me, I have to agree with you about Time for season one, as do the Gate World contributors, because that's what they voted for way above everything else. Then in season two, I would go with Gauntlet, Twin Destinies, or Malice. I can't pick among those three. I just can't. I really love Twin Destinies. Gauntlet, I thought, was just a great ending, especially since the series wasn't going to go on. And that Malice, I thought, was really cool. And I loved the setting in the Beastie Badlands, which was kind of cool. And so I can't decide. I can't decide. Oh, somebody's asking me, am I planning on doing a third part?
Barbara, what I suggest is you watch either SG-1 or Atlantis or both, and then I'll come back on the show and we'll do a two-parter on either or both.
Okay, that sounds really, really good. I will do that. Well, thank you so much. This was
well, thanks for having me.
Thank you, and have a great year. And I'm looking forward to maybe some more Stargate coming up in 2013.
Well, we'll see what the future holds.
Okay, thank you so much, Joe. This has been fun.
Thanks, Barbara.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good night. Bye.
Night. You've been listening to Let's Talk TV Live with your host, Barbara Barnett, sponsored by Wireless One Marketing. If you need an app for whatever you're doing, if you're a small business, if you are a not-for-profit, please, please check out Wireless One Marketing at 847-637-2514 or visit their website. Next week, Monday night, we're going to be going back to Once Upon a Time, talk to Eddie Kitsis and Adam Horowitz. So we will see you on Monday night. Good night, and thanks for tuning in. Bye.